Another special edition of Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. I'm in Glendale, Arizona. We got Jim Arroyo from the Yavapai County Preparedness Team. We met last week, and I was very impressed with what they got going on. I want to hear every little thing about them. Arizona is going to get some attention from the Love Bus and the volunteerist community here, and I've been talking to guys, you know, for the past few weeks, and I tell you, Arizona's going to get some attention and be an inspiration to a lot of people. And while we've been on the trip, you know, James and Jim and his wife Janet have been a beacon of light. You know, one thing that we didn't talk about when we met is that you'd recently been on a 60 Minutes episode, weren't you?
That's correct.
You know, tell us all about that, how that came about and what the subject matter was, and we'll include that in the archive.
Okay. Well, it was kind of funny because right after January the 6th and that major fiasco that happened in Washington, being the PIO for the state of Arizona for Arizona State Oathkeepers, I did a lot of interviews, and I got called from Wall Street Journal and the Washington Post and all kinds of others. And then all of a sudden I get a call from 60 Minutes News wanting to know all about what happened and then who we are and what we're really all about. So I told them we had nothing to do with January the 6th and that we're a preparedness team. We teach classes and teach people how to be ready for natural and man-made disasters. So they were very interested. And so what I told them, I said, well, I'll tell you what, how would you like to come out to Arizona? You know, I didn't think they would. And come to one of our meetings and film it and see exactly what we do. And Ashley Vallely, the one who's the producer for Sharon, what's Sharon's last name?
Alfonsi.
Says, let me check with my producer and my editor. So the next day she calls me back and she goes, Jim, we're flying out. Just like that. And I tell you what.
Of course they are.
It was a crazy experience. These guys showed up with so much camera equipment and turned the gym into a film studio with all this stuff. They brought in a team from Phoenix. They brought in a team from Los Angeles. And then, of course, the three gals flew out from New York. And they set up this whole interview. And what you actually saw on 60 Minutes News was 4 minutes of literally 10 hour filming. So they filmed all our classes. They filmed our main meeting. My interview alone with Sharon Alfonsi was over 2 hours. But that's pretty much the way 60 Minutes operates. They film and film and film, and then they show you 2 minutes of what they did.
Yeah, how accurately do you think they portrayed you and your organization? Because I've had experience with this, and that's why I only do live appearances, because I don't trust them. And you know, what do you think? Their portrayal of you was accurate or what?
I'll be perfectly honest with you. We were pretty happy with what was put out. All we were hoping for is that they would show more of what we really do. But they didn't say anything negative about us. They didn't the audience anything other than the absolute truth. I was pretty shocked. Of course, they showed video footage from all the morons in Washington, D.C. at the Trump rally and then, you know, the Capitol getting attacked by the idiot patrol. But that didn't have anything to do with us or what we're doing. It was a contrast between what real Oath Keepers do versus what Stuart Rhodes was involved with and those other morons that stormed the Capitol like, you know, it was the Alamo or something.
Well, tell us about Yavapai County Preparedness Team and your affiliation with Oath Keepers. We've had Stuart Rhodes on for years. I've known him from back before he was Oath Keepers and, you know, and stuff. You know, things are going to be portrayed how they want them portrayed, and I'm as surprised as you are that you were accurately portrayed. But with the internet, it's changed. I've been doing this since the early 90s, and I'll tell you, they're not able to lie as freely as they used to. You know, tell us about how you started and what you're doing and where you're going. I want to hear every little old thing.
Okay, well, let me start with how we got involved with Oath Keepers. I went to my first meeting. A friend of mine I knew here in Chino Valley was involved in this was during Bundy Ranch. This would have been March of 2014. Janet and I attended our first meeting.
Yeah.
And then my buddy said, I've got to leave town. I'm moving. I got another job out of state. And he wanted me to be involved and take over. So Janet and I attended a couple of meetings. And then by June of that same year in 2014, I was elected the leader of Yavapai County. And then shortly thereafter, I was made state vice president under Gerald Rhodes, no relation to Stuart. And we've been in it for, we're in our eighth year of operation. So we are the largest active Oath Keepers group in the United States. I've got almost 800 members on my roster. And Janet and I have been doing it ever since. And then Yavapai County Preparedness Team was quite simply a corporate structure. We wanted to incorporate our Oath Keepers of Yavapai County chapter in order to get insurance and get a bank account and be able to take donations. So we incorporated as a 501c3. We're a nonprofit, and we are listed as a public charity on the Arizona Corporation Commission. And the reason we did it, we wanted to incorporate under Oath Keepers, but Stuart wouldn't allow it. So he said, just create a different name and incorporate your chapter. So that's how we created that. And for the beginning portion of the corporation, that's what it was just a corporation for the Yavapai Oath Keepers. Then it became a .org, and now it is a separate organization where Yavapai Oath Keepers, or Yavapai County Oath Keepers, I should say, is actually under the umbrella of the Yavapai County Preparedness Team. And we've been going pretty strong for about a year with the corporation. Again, we're the longest running group under the same leadership in the United States. And then we formed the USCPT, which is the United States County Preparedness Teams. That's our nationwide organization now. That is now officially underway. And we held our first Zoom meeting, and we had six states and two countries participate in that. So we have expats living in Panama and in England that are a part of the USCPT. So we're technically, we're international now. And our organization has been interviewed. We actually had the Spanish version. Was it Spain or France? Which one was it? Yeah, both. We actually had the French came out and did it, their version of 60 Minutes. So we've got international press on our organization right here in Little Ochino Valley, but they were pretty impressed with what they saw. And they were trying to showcase, because everybody says, oh, Oath Keepers are a crazy anti-government right-wing militia. All of that is BS. That's always been nothing but nonsense. We're not a militia. We put that out all the time. So we've gotten some international coverage. And then, you know, with all the other journalists out there covering our chapter, we're pretty well known around the country and around the world right now.
As what? I mean, you created the structure to do what?
Okay, the main premise of our organization is to educate the public and train them to be prepared for any and all natural and man-made disasters. So the way we put it out, natural disasters are a no-brainer. That's fires, floods, hurricanes, earthquakes, tornadoes, things of this nature. But our main focus is on man-made disasters. So we started out with our main wargaming of two scenarios. One was an economic collapse of the United States. What is it people need to do to be prepared for another version of 2008, which everybody got beat up pretty well on that. But what if there was a complete economic collapse? So we wargame that out, and we train people in all of the different areas, and I'll go over those. But then we also wargamed out what would happen if there was an EMP attack on the power grid or a cyber attack, as Ted Koppel's book, Lights Out, discussed. And if there was an EMP attack or a cyber attack on the power grid, that'll certainly put us into economic collapse, like instantly. So we wargamed that one out. And then we went on by ourselves. National didn't want to touch this one, but we wanted to wargame out what would happen in a full World War III scenario. And we put together a training program and started teaching our people what they need to do in the event that the United States goes into a full global war, and possibly with it on our own soil. And then we did the final one, and this is my favorite one, and it's the one that gets me in all the trouble because it's what all of the media ask me about. And the scenario is civil unrest that leads to full-scale civil war in the United States. And we train people to be prepared for that. And the beauty of our program is all of those scenarios, natural or man-made, up to and including the pandemic, which we were prepared for, we train people in five major disciplines. One is security for protecting your home and your neighborhood. One is general preparedness. One is communications. Then we have medical, and then we have engineering. So we teach people everything from stop the bleed courses, basic trauma, all types of first aid in case there's a problem at home. And then we took and went further with our program. Well, let me touch on the others real quick. Engineering is dealing with infrastructure or making repairs in your neighborhood or to your home in the event of a disaster. We also have a home medicine team, which is part of our medical team dealing with herbal remedies, tinctures, concoctions, decoctions, things of this nature. And then the preparedness team, everything we do is preparedness, but we broke out these other areas in the Oath Keeper CPT program because we felt that they deserved their own section and it was more complex. But preparedness team deals with everything else like animal husbandry, farming, growing food, preserving food, all any other training that's required for just basic survival. So we have that team. Then we also are in the process of developing the first ever, because in the Oath Keeper system, they don't have a home medicine team. They just talk about basic medical training, first aid for the most part. But we also now have a psychological stress team so that in the event of a disaster, people are going to suffer from psychological trauma as well as physical trauma. So we have a team of people in the mental health industry that are putting together a program to be able to assist the community with counseling post event, or actually during the event, and be able to help people deal with that type of trauma. And then the final one is we set up an intelligence unit. And this was done actually through the national level, where we realized that all the information we're getting from the mainstream media is garbage, that Oath Keepers needs its own intelligence section. And being former military and law enforcement, you know, we should have known better right at the beginning that we have to have our own intelligence unit set up so they could filter through all the garbage and then produce actionable intelligence for the organization. Now, that doesn't mean we're going to go out on raids and run military type operations. Actionable intelligence for us could be, okay, we're getting warning that there's a hurricane about to hit Louisiana again, and we need to start warning the people, get them ready, help get them evacuated, and then be prepared to go in and run search and rescue operations and help the community, because there's always those that stay behind. Janet lived in New Orleans for 5 years. She'll tell you there are people there. They don't care if it was a category 9. They're not going to leave. So there's always rescue operations afterwards. So that's the type of, you know, actionable intelligence. If we know if there's a major economic issue coming down politically, then we can warn people that, you know, there could be a financial collapse. You need to have a certain amount of money on hand. And, you know, there could be a trucker strike. So there's going to be supply chain disruptions. So you may want to go hit Costco and load up your grocery cart and, you know, things of this nature. So this is what we do, is it's all in the preparedness realm to help our community, which in fact helps relieve stress on the city, state, and federal government, because we have more people that are prepared and are also willing to step up and volunteer to help out after the disaster happens.
You know, I've been doing this for a long time, and everything that you're describing, in general, the media and the government doesn't like. They don't want you not dependent on them. They
exactly.
Don't. Katrina comes comes along, and you got 600 bass boats ready to go in and take people off their roofs, and they're being pointed away with an M16 from FEMA. So
right.
I understand, you know, this, you would think that this would be supported and that this is a good idea and they portray you in a good light. And I'm glad that they, you know, didn't demonize you. And it's more difficult for them to do so with the way communications are, but they're trying to take care of that too. They go, "Oh, the truth is whatever we tell you." And and you're not, you know, 35. I mean, you're of age. I mean, you're an experienced individual. So there's some gray there. So you've been around the block. You know what's really going on, and you know how to, you know, portray yourself. And everything that you're talking about, would 10 years ago, they would have labeled you a militia whether you wanted to be or not.
Which they did. Yeah, just ask the Southern Poverty Law Center. That's where everybody gets their information as far as what Oath Keepers is, or they go on to Wikipedia, which is completely ignorant. That's not who we are. You know, this is the interesting
thing.
They're
not ignorant. They're biased.
Yeah, exactly. You know, they portray us as anti-government extremists. You know, we're all former professionals. We're military, law. In some cases, myself, I serve both in the military and in law enforcement. We have firefighters. We have first responders. We are the government. But if you think about it, the way this country was founded, we are a government of the people, by the people, for the people. So their whole mantra that we're anti-government is completely ridiculous. You know, we're the ones that are is a do-gooder organization on steroids. That's all.
Well, you know, I'm going to make some observations and you tell me how far off I am.
Okay, go for it.
They don't care.
That's true. That's very true.
You know, I mean, skip to the end. And the what we need are people just like you and communities that are doing exactly what you're doing. And my only concern is, as we had met before and talked about it, is that when you do become certainly an influential large organization, how many people are in the Yavapai organization?
Okay, within our Yavapai County, probably 600 to 700, and then about another 100 that are scattered around in neighboring counties like Maricopa. The guys from Phoenix come up to our meetings all the time. So we have a pretty large roster. Thank God they don't all show up at once because my building's not that big. But we do have 200 to 250 people on average come to our meetings. We have had some pretty crazy meetings, Ernie. We've had some in the 400 to 450 where I literally have over 100 people standing packed shoulder to shoulder in the back of the gymnasium. We literally run out of chairs. And they've come for big, big meetings. Just recently, the county sheriff came again. And that's the difference between us is we have a relationship with our elected representatives. Everybody in our district from down in Phoenix comes to our meetings. Our county board of supervisor chairman and other board of supervisor members come. We've had our elected representative Paul Gosar come to our meetings. The county sheriff, both Scott Masher and the new sheriff David Rhodes, both came to our last meeting. So, you know, we have a tremendous relationship with our local government. If we were anti-government, why do we have these people come in? And we don't invite them. They call us and ask to come and address our organization.
Because you got numbers and influence. Who are we kidding?
Exactly.
You know, you know, I want to ask some, you know, I know a bunch of questions. My audience is just on the edge of their seat waiting for me to ask you. In politics, are you comfortable with your elected representatives in Yavapai County?
As far as our House, we're very comfortable with Quang Nguyen. We like Judy Burgess. She's a career politician. She knows what she's doing. Karen Fan, the president of the Senate, is actually our senator. We're pretty happy with what's gone on down there with the audit, how she's run that. There may be some other issues yet coming out of that. But as far as our local representatives, yeah, we're pretty happy. Our county board of supervisors, I honestly can't say that I've got a lot to complain about from any of them. But, you know, we're an apolitical, nonpartisan organization, and we have to be, because not only is Oath Keepers a separate corporation out of Nevada, but the Yavapai County Preparedness Team is a 501c3, so we're not allowed to be political.
Yeah, well, you know, Jim is, okay?
Yeah.
So I'm looking at, there's going to be, I'm very familiar with Arizona. I'm familiar with Yavapai County. And we used to work with Carol Springer a lot back when she was a senator and then became treasurer, and then she was a supervisor up there. We know how it works, and we know the reputation of Yavapai County, so I can go on and on and on. But the point is that when they go to another lockdown, or they attempt to do that, do you think Yavapai County supervisors are going to be supportive of a lockdown or not?
I honestly don't think so. I know for a fact that the county sheriff won't go along with it. We do know that Supervisor Craig Brown, the chairman of the board, started to lock down the public building again, and we put a lot of pressure on him. And I know Craig Brown very well. I've known him for 20 years. And then all of a sudden they opened the building back up. So I don't believe they'll go along with it. But it's up to the governor, and we need to put pressure on Governor Ducey to do basically what just happened in Florida with Governor DeSantis. I don't know if you heard what that was. It was just released today.
This
is awesome. He put it out. This is right from the top dog. The governor said any business in Florida that requires a mask or asks someone to provide proof that they've been vaccinated will get a $5,000 fine from the state of Florida per case, per individual. So I think that type of pressure is what we need. I'm going to present that directly to Quang Nguyen and Judy Burgess and Senator Karen Fan, that we need the same type of legislation here, and present it to the governor. And if we do that, that puts an end to all of this garbage, because there's a major resistance going on nationwide.
Bullshit.
So yeah, you know.
But why are they attempting this? Why did the Board of Supervisors shut down the county building? Why are they participating in this? Who do they answer to? What were they thinking?
Well, according to Craig Brown, he was concerned that, in fact, when he put it out, one of our representatives contacted him, and you know who she is. She was at the meeting,
right?
And she's the head of Yavapai Rising, and she called Craig Brown, and she said, "Why are you locking down the buildings?" And he flat out said, "Because you people are making my people sick." And she went into orbit, and that went around like wildfire. And a few days later, they reopened. There was a lot of phone calls and pressure put on them. So, you know, they're following the party line that this is a really serious, and it's not near as serious as what they think it is. It's a major hoax. Yes, some people are getting sick, some people are dying, but we're not getting anywhere close to the
When you say now. Party line, what do you mean party line? Democratic Party, government party, those party, what do you mean?
Yeah, the government themselves, the federal government has perpetrated this hoax on the American people. It's a population control measure. COVID-19 is not the biological weapon. The vaccine, their term, not ours, it's an experimental drug, is the biological weapon. So they want to get as many people vaccinated as many times as possible, because there is an all-out push with this great reset that is coming globally to wipe out as much of the population as possible.
And people are going to... Oh, so you think this is a death shot?
Oh, absolutely. No two ways about it. The research that's been done, the biological warfare research that was done at the Chapel Hill in North Carolina, then it went from there to Canada, and then from there Fauci sent it on to the Wuhan lab, the only level 4 biological warfare laboratory in China, happened to be in Wuhan. So yeah, there's no two ways about it. You know, I'm former military. I know what nuclear, chemical, and biological warfare are all about. This is a bioweapon. It is designed to damage people. It is a chimera, which means it's designed to do further damage to the human body. The bat virus is all bogus. It may have come from a bat, but when you enhance that to destroy humans, that's biological warfare. And that is not only against Geneva Convention, but it is also against the Nuremberg Code and quite a few other codes out there. So this virus...
You know, this is, you know, of course, readers of, I don't know how much time you've spent on Freedom's Phoenix since we talked, but you can kind of get the idea, we get it, you know? And the thing is that it's as much as this happens and the people start to learn about it, it's not unknown to those in positions of influence and power with shiny badges, with government titles that are imposing things that they know are counter to common sense and the truth. And what, I mean, what's really going on? I mean, who are you preparing against?
We are preparing our people to be able to survive whatever they're going to throw at us. Even if the government puts on a complete lockdown or they create supply chain disruptions, a trucker strike, anything that can be a problem with getting groceries or fuel, we're preparing our people now to ride it out to the bitter end until this all gets settled one way or another.
But well, there's going to be the supply chain is somebody makes it, somebody delivers it to retail, whoever sells it to you, and you go buy it. So
Correct. It's
each one of those points are a point of failure that they're trying to control, and you're not allowed. When they did this in the March, I remember you go to Walmart in some places and seeds were non-essential items. I'm like, who in the hell decided that?
Yeah.
You know? So this is a coordinated attack on the middle class, on ma and pa restaurants, on the sole proprietor, owner of whatever. And if you don't have a board of directors they happen to sit on for the big box of something, they're driving you out of business. And if they got to do it again, and the only people that survived, as you travel around the country or where we get back to Arizona, were the ones that refused to comply. And
right.
I'm seeing a not just a desire or as an activist, I mean self-preservation to not comply with another lockdown. Where are you there? Certainly as a preparedness 501c3, I don't know, do you consider that a preparedness thing or is that a political thing or what?
No, we consider that survival, and we put it out on tape. We film all of our meetings. Everything's on camera. And we post it, but I put out months ago, open your businesses. Don't comply with any of this. That's not political. That's survival. This is a violation of your rights. And being that oath keepers, the whole concept of being an oath keeper is upholding, defending the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Well, when I was in the military, they were really good at telling me about foreign enemies. Back then it was the Cold War, so it was the Russians. But they never told me about domestic enemies. These people are domestic enemies, and it's not political. This is violating your rights as a business owner and as a person. So, yeah, we don't consider that politics at all. You violate the Constitution, we're going to be all over you like white on rice.
So where is your family? Do you have, like, children, grandchildren somewhere in the country, in Arizona, where?
Oh, yeah. I've got a son and daughter-in-law here in Chino Valley with me and my three grandchildren. And then I've got a son-in-law and a daughter in California with my other three grandchildren. And
so when they got an Antifa hammer and sickle tattooed teacher of we're making you all Antifa and you get extra credit to go protest, where are you on that?
We talk to our family all the time to not buy into any of that crap, to make sure you're talking to my grandchildren and your friends' children to find out what's going on out there. We know for a fact that these schools from kindergarten on up through college are little communist propaganda centers. You're seeing it all the time. The communists are coming out of the woodwork and are admitting to it that they're in control. They're telling the children how they're going to believe. Yeah, and we're all over that. The idea is to try to educate people to either pull your kids out of these schools and homeschool them or get onto the teachers and make sure you're in a more conservative school if you can afford to put them in a private school. But there's no two ways about it that all of our school systems have been corrupted by the communists.
You know, we, as Second Amendment is for Everyone, our Second Amendment advocacy group, we were very involved in creating the atmosphere that we got the unrestricted concealed carry here in Arizona.
Right.
And when that happened, as I remember, that was signed by Janet Napolitano. And if it wasn't that, it was, we were funding extra. I don't know if you remember, there was like, it started off with a $200 tax credit for funding extracurricular activities at schools, you know, like band or art or something like that.
Right.
And what we did in Wickenburg, we funded AR-15 rifle team, and it was, you know, just to, you know, push the edge and so on. And all of that went skating through. It was amazing what happened during the Janet Napolitano, which later went on to be Homeland Security under Obama.
Right.
Well, we were interested in that. What was, we always look, you know, check your six, you know, you look behind, you know, what happened? Well, as part of that negotiation, that's when they got taxpayer funded preschool down to 3 years old. And they go, yeah, we'll let you have your guns as long as we get to communize all your children from three. And I'm going, wow. You know, this is a long-term plan with these people.
Oh,
so
yeah.
You got to check everything.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm not, I wasn't feeling all warm and fuzzy about it then either. So this is, when you advocate homeschooling, do you have like co-ops or a homeschooling group that you support the people doing it?
No, not with our organization. You know, we're involved in so many different aspects right now. We can't do everything.
Yeah.
But we always recommend people that if you can homeschool your children or link up with somebody who does, and you can put several kids in a small home and teach them that way. So, yeah, I'm a big proponent of homeschooling. I do not agree with the public school system. Most of my grandchildren are in private schools. Only a couple of them are in a public school. But, yeah, we're very big on that because we know what they're doing. And then, you know, I've got a granddaughter getting ready to start college at the University of San Diego. And it's like, she's going to come out of there radicalized. And, you know, I'm going to be a nutcase. But hopefully she'll keep her head on her shoulders.
Well, this is a, you know, you got on the radar screen with 60 Minutes. And I've had Mark Potok from the Southern Poverty Law Center on my show. You should go check that show out. That'll be entertainment.
Oh, yeah.
And Heidi Beirich, their director of special projects, you know, a few times. That's interesting. And by the time Mark Potok came on my show, they had already listed Freedom's Phoenix as a, I don't know, patriot enabler or some crap like that. And I'm going, oh, what do I got to do to be on the list, man? All my friends are on. Crap, I mean, what do I got to do?
Yeah.
So, you know, they are, the Southern Poverty Law Center, do you think their influence is waning or are they becoming even more powerful?
I think it's waning and I can prove that. I actually met Morris Dees at a college in California just before we moved here back in the late 90s. And, you know, we listened to his lecture. You know, the guy's a great speaker. He's got that Southern accent. He's a very charming guy, very intelligent. But I can tell you that a lot of law enforcement, when I was a volunteer with Chino PD for about 7 years, most law enforcement stopped taking information from the Southern Poverty Law Center because they knew it was tainted. The organization is basically a communist organization.
Yeah.
And everything they put out about us is garbage. You know, you mentioned Mark Potok. I would love to talk to him because I always give the radical left a chance to have at me one-on-one. And I can generally straighten things out by giving them a perspective that they don't know about.
Now, they know.
Yeah, if they're hardcore, you know, it's not going to matter. But I think it's always a good idea to sit down and talk before we decide someday to start shooting at each other.
Yeah, you go to freedomsphoenix.com. At the top right is Declare Your Independence logo you'll see up there, and you click in there. On the right side, it says Shows by Guest. And if you look for Mark Potok, you'll see the show and listen to those years ago, and you will be entertained. You know, and
I will do that.
It was all I could do during the break to keep him on, you know. Yeah, no, don't go anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, it's been, and matter of fact, I had the director of special projects was scheduled 2 days later, and she immediately called back, and it had been the fourth or fifth time we had interviewed her over the years, and she had to cancel. You know, she was like, you know, and Mark felt like he got tricked. You know, you've been talking to this guy, he thought he'd have a, you know, sympathetic interview or so. I don't know. These guys don't check, you know, they don't know what the hell's going on.
Right.
And it's been interesting to me, you know, to watch this play out on the internet the same way that it did in the media. And the history of the Southern Poverty Law Center was after the Church Commission, when they had domestic intelligence and FBI and everything were surveilling anti-war groups and black communities and Quakers and all this other stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And they had to stop it. Well, the Southern Poverty Law Center came in, and they were like a private organization that would send information to law enforcement, a list of these are the people you need to stop and check out and frisk and put a knee in their back and whatever. And that's pretty much how law enforcement operated. If the Southern Poverty Law Center said they were a threat, they were surveilled. And if you got on their list, well, then you were on their list. And we would highlight that and make fun of it. And at the time, during, you know, when Ron Paul was running, what developed out of that was an organization called Cop Block. And all it was videotaping of officers doing the very stuff that everybody believed was impossible. They go, no, they would never do that. Well, let me show you the videotape. Well, now everybody's got videotape in their freaking phone. So it's so obvious that, you know, things happen. But our experience has been just at the top of the page this morning on Freedom's Phoenix, we put Vampire Killer 2000, which was Jack McLam, an officer, Phoenix policeman in Arizona, that was the original Officer Friendly.
Oh,
and he had Police and Military Against the New World Order, Aid and Abet magazine. And the reason he was fired like four or five times and rehired is because he refused to give the database to law enforcement. He goes, no, I'm not giving it to you. And this has been something that we've been up close and personal for decades. So I'm very curious as to how you're being treated, how you're, you know, defending yourself against this. And you're certainly 501c3 means you made it through the freaking IRS gave you certification, because they were denying a lot of conservative organizations. How was your experience getting it?
We had no problem whatsoever. You know, we submitted all our paperwork and told them exactly what we're doing. And, you know, we always invite people, if you want to see what we're really doing, come to a meeting. We're open to the public. We're not hiding. We're not some secret squirrel organization. So yeah, we're very much in the open. And if you doubt, just go on YouTube and look at my YouTube channel. All our meetings are there recorded. You can watch all 2 hours of it. Go on my website or go to in Prescott. There's Prescott E-News. We have our own section there on Prescott E-News. So, you know, we're pretty open about what we do. Yeah, we have our own website. I mean, if anybody has questions, you can give us a call. You can send me an email. I'll give an interview to any organization that wants to talk. And we'll explain exactly who we are and what we are and what we're not. And again, we are not a militia. We've never been a militia.
Well, how do you think being that documented is your protection?
They basically don't have any evidence against us. And when we show people exactly what we're doing, that is the best protection we have. You can't come and say that we're plotting to go and, you know, attack the Capitol on January the 6th when that's not who we are and what we do. We've never done that. Everything we do is preparedness to try to help people be ready for natural and man-made disasters, thereby alleviating stress on the local, state, and federal governments so that they can focus on those people that weren't prepared. And everything we do is volunteerism, which we're part of the CERT program, the Community Emergency Response Team. Janet and I are both background checked and credentialed through the Yavapai County Office of Emergency Management. We work with our chief of police. So much for being anti-government extremists. You know,
well, how do you vet people? You have that people. I mean, you know, if you're having a meeting with, you know, 200 people, I guarantee there's agent of somebody there, or a provocateur or something. You know, so
vet anybody. We're open to the public. The only group that we vet more critically is our security element, because that deals with firearms and weapons training and things of that nature. But as far as all of the other groups, anybody's welcome to come and take our classes or participate in our meetings or come and get the information. You know, we do an intelligence briefing at every meeting, and we usually give out some sort of a training class at every main meeting, but we don't vet anybody. And I'll tell you, we've only had to get rid of a couple of people in the last 8 years with all of the hundreds that we have participating. So we don't have problems, you know, and we've invited the radical left, and some of them have come and sat in and said, wow, you know, we were completely wrong about you guys. You're nothing like what we thought or what we were told. And, you know, we've had relationships with liberal Democrats and they're welcome, you know, and we don't discriminate. You know, they try calling us a white supremacist or white nationalist group. We don't discriminate against race, creed, color, religion, sexual preference, national origin, any of that stuff. Everybody is welcome. You can come. What we are here to do is to teach. We're a learning institution. We're not about politics. We're not about racism or any of that crap. That's all made up by the lunatic left. And everybody's welcome to come, and you can see what we're doing. And yeah, I bag on Antifa and BLM all the time because they're radical leftists. And look at what they've done. They've destroyed cities. They've killed police officers. They've killed people in the streets. They've done every stupid thing. And then all of a sudden, this January 6th thing comes along where they basically did a little property damage. And I'm not justifying it, but they kicked down some barricades, entered the Capitol, and filmed themselves doing stupid stuff. But, you know, the only person that was shot and killed was by a police officer at the Capitol. And the other four people all died of physical injuries, several strokes. And the other police officer that died, he died of a stroke. He wasn't hit in the head with a fire extinguisher like the media put out. And everybody thought, oh, my God, Oath Keepers hit this guy with a fire extinguisher. It never happened. So, you know,
I'm of the opinion that was staged all to hell.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't even want to talk. I'm waiting for the movie.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
You know, Janet, you know, she's trying to chime in, or she's shoulder surfing you there a little bit. Janet, what do you got to say?
My job's just to kind of help him remember some things that we've talked about in the past. And I think...
Yeah, what are you, Nancy Reagan?
I would be honored. No, I think our group is something we really need to be proud of, because we've really contributed a lot to a lot of people, and they've told us so. They walk in that door going, what do I do? What do I do? We've had people walk in our door and literally stop in the doorway and weep when they see all these people. And I go up and I try to greet them and ask them, what's wrong? How can I help you? And they say, I thought I was alone. And when they see that they have neighbors and they can make friends and they're all preparing together, and then they break up into neighborhood teams. So they not only come to our group twice a month, but they go into their own neighborhood, meet the people that live around them, and put together assets that they can use together right on their block. So now,
you know, how long have you guys been there? When did you move to Prescott area?
2001.
Okay, so it's relatively recent. You know, this is, I've been around because, nah, it's a long story, but I've been to events in Prescott where they're since Ross Perot in 92, and you know, libertarian things in 94, and Ron Paul in 08, and so on. I mean, Prescott, it's easy to get 500, 600, 700 people filling a ballroom if they want to know what's up. And
oh, yeah.
And I'm like, why do you think that is?
Prescott, Arizona is a very conservative place. We're known as one of the most conservative counties, but Prescott certainly is more conservative. And yeah, we do have our share of liberal Democrats, and
yeah, they're in office.
Yeah, well, that's true. And you know, that's normal. We have Prescott College and Yavapai College. So being a college town, you're going to have your loony lefties there. They're mostly kids and they're peaceful. You know, they haven't caused a lot of problems for us. It's not like Phoenix or certainly other places like Portland or Seattle or Minneapolis. You know, these kids aren't that bad here, but, you know, we're conservative, and if there's a big event and it has to do with conservatism during the political season, then yeah, we get a lot of people can show up.
Why? I mean, they feel threatened. They're retired and they got time. It's just nice weather and they want to get outside. I mean, there has to be a reason.
I think it's more civic duty, is that they feel like you know, you have to be out there participating in the system. And they're the types that do. Yeah, we're a retirement community, so they don't have a lot else to do. But we have a lot of the retirees are involved in the political system. They're committee precinct members and such. So, yeah, we're a pretty politically active area. But I think after what happened in this last election, we're getting a lot more people involved in political activism. And we even put that out there, you know, Yavapai Rising is an organization that came out of our organization, and they started up this group, and it's grown. And, you know, I'm a guest speaker at their meetings from time to time. And when you go to a Yavapai Rising meeting, which is a political action committee, and I ask them how many people here have been to an Oathkeeper meeting, virtually every hand goes up. So they're all part of the same group. But because we're not allowed to be politically active, there's no rule that says we can't support or steer people in the right direction. And I tell people in our meetings, even if you don't get involved with Yavapai Rising and Mona's group, find a group. We'll help guide you there, but get active, do something, because this is the problem with the conservative Republican Party and politics in general, is people sit on their hands too much. So either go down swinging or just stop griping about politics. Yeah. Because if you do something, you have to fix it.
Mona's who introduced you and I and Janet to each other.
Right.
And I'm wondering what her motivation is. She's involved on the political action committee tact of this. Why? Because she feels the need for something.
Yeah, something's got to be done. She was pretty involved with the Tea Party. And with once this election went sideways with President Trump, everybody got pissed and they wanted to do something. And so these groups are forming everywhere, and people are wanting to become politically active, because we still feel we have a chance. It may not work. We may fail. And the whole concept of the Yavapai County preparedness team is so when it does fail, or when there is a problem, we have a contingency plan, a solution. Yeah. So that's the main premise for us. But we always advocate, you know, try to do everything you can before, you know, especially civil unrest kicks in, or God forbid this country goes into a second civil war, which is what it's looking like where we're headed.
Yeah,
here.
Civil war, whom against whom? It's not going to be, when I see, you know, the Antifa crowd arming up and they're going to be, oh, we're going to go, well, that's going to be a short skirmish. I don't see what they think they're going to accomplish with an actual armed insurrection. It's going to be, you know, who against who. I don't. What do you think?
Okay, I get asked this all the time, and this is what I tell people: it's not North versus South this time, like it was before, is where the states divided themselves. This is an ideology, a war of ideology. What we have is pretty much Christian, conservative, constitutional people versus the communists. And I don't call them socialists or leftists or progressives, because that's all Bravo Sierra. They are communists, and that's what we're going to be fighting. And they are in every state, in every city, in every town. They're everywhere. So this is the ideology that's going to be formed up that will eventually go to a slugfest. It never fails. The problem is we have a federal government that's been taken over by these radical leftists, and we've got communists running this country, and you've got communists in the military, in the FBI, in the CIA. They've infiltrated everything. And when it does come to a slugfest, even if everybody thinks, oh, Antifa is just a small amount, no, that's not all of them. There's a lot of other groups out there. But then you've got the Communist Chinese Party. Yeah. That's already on our soil. I just got a report from Dave Hodges today that at Camp Grayling in Michigan, a battalion of Chinese military showed up for training. So they're here. The Russians have always been here training, and there was plenty of evidence of Russian special forces training out of Fort Carson, Colorado. So the bottom line is the communists are going to try to take over. And if you ever listen to the interview with Yuri Bezmenov back in the 80s and late 70s,
right? Yeah, G.
There.
Edward Griffin. I know G. Edward well. And
yeah. Okay. So what he said was, when this all kicks off and we help support the communists in America to overthrow the American government. When the Russians come in, they're going to kill all of those American communists. He just flat out said it. He says, here's the deal. And I teach this. I lecture on this all the time on the history of
political. Oh, yeah. The brown shirts go first.
Oh, yeah. So he said it flat out. He says, here's in Russia, we have a simple philosophy. He says, if your own country can't trust you, you're a traitor. You've turned against your country. How can we trust you? So therefore, they're going to eliminate you. And I'll guarantee you the Chinese have the exact same philosophy. They will come here and their mission is to replace our population, the entire population. And they're the only country in the world that could pull it off.
Oh, man. They're going to find rifles behind blades of grass, you think?
Exactly. So imagine what a slugfest this will be. And I had this discussion in a major interview with Dave Hodges recently. So I gave him, because he was thinking that, oh, they're going to use the virus to try to get rid of a bunch of the population. And I told him that's not going to work well enough. So here's a better scenario. If I'm the Chinese Communist Party and I want to eliminate this place, I'm going to use an EMP weapon. And Dave right away says, well, you'll destroy all the infrastructure and they want to take over the infrastructure and use it. And that's true. But if they use an EMP weapon, they will kill 90% of our population in 1 year. The Chinese are the only ones that can come into this country after an EMP burst destroys all the transformers and all the electronics and replace them. Because right now, that's where they're all being made. Yeah. And they have the capability to ship in here hundreds of transformers, and they'll send in millions of Chinese engineers and military to move these things to the strategic locations. I believe the Chinese can completely rebuild our power grid in probably less than 30 days.
This, so the audience understands what he's talking about. In Northwest Phoenix, there was a large transformer, and they're just filled with like diesel fuel or oil or something.
Yeah.
And it was a 308 or a 50 caliber went through it, drained it out, and it blew up.
Right.
And it took them like a year and a half to replace that one.
Exactly.
And Arizona Public Service, a good friend of mine works for the company. He goes, you wanted to take down the grid here, you could do that in a day, one guy. If you know what to do, yeah, and you're done. So this is why I've been very diligent with myself, my family, my audience. We're going decentralized in our power. Solar, batteries, I mean, it's a thing. And they're cheap as hell now, and that's going to change in a week. So yeah. I've been on a race ordering stuff right now, and I'm going, man, I really like to keep some of that crypto and silver, but I'm thinking I'm willing to trade some for some electrical power as
That's
I'm
right.
sitting here sweating. So this is it's refreshing to hear that you guys have taken this seriously and taken steps to make sure yourself and your friends and neighbors and being an inspiration for around the country and the world that you're doing this. I'm wondering how likely you think it is that the scenario that you're preparing for is going to happen.
I believe it's very likely. It's increasing in its intensity. And, you know, as an analyst, part of being in the intelligence section is getting all this information and analyzing it and looking at the possible scenarios. It's looking more and more like it's going that direction. And, you know, we certainly could get an EMP attack from any country. You know, once Iran gets the bomb, they can deliver an EMP burst. And most people don't even realize what that is. It's simply about a 10 kiloton bomb detonated at 300 mile altitude, takes out all of CONUS, that's continental United States, all of southern Canada and all of northern Mexico in one shot and puts us back in the 1800s. So it is very likely other countries. Pakistan has nuclear capabilities. Of course, the Russians and the Chinese could do it. But we know for a fact that the Chinese will probably go the route of a cyber attack rather than have to hassle with rebuilding all the transformers. They'll just shut them down by computer, which means you can turn them right back on when you take over. But China wants this country.
Why? What do they care? They don't got enough country? Jim, did I lose you?
To feed their people in the future.
Okay, well, yeah, I think you broke up there for a second. I'm going, why would China want this country? They don't got enough people in country?
They need the farming capability. The United States at one point was capable of feeding the whole world. But they know that in China, they don't have the farming capability. They want the farmland. And they also want the rare earths for military purposes.
Yeah, they just sent out, you know, the United States Department of Agriculture sent out letters to farmers. They're paying them 1.5 times their crop's worth if they'll plow it.
Right. Correct.
I'm like, well, that's stupid. When, as a kid in the 60s, early 70s, my father would tell me about how they paid farmers in the Depression to not produce foods for prices to go up. And I'm like, well, that was stupid, you know? And they're doing it now. And
right.
That's just as stupid. So,
only this go around, it's not for price control. This is a planned starvation of the population of the United States. I don't think they're going to get the amount of people dead with just this experimental drug and their term vaccine. They're going to need to do something else. So they're going to push us into a depression, and then they're going to go for the starvation, just like what the Russians did to the Ukrainians. Only the Russians were smart enough to take the food. They didn't destroy it. They used it for themselves and their military. But in this case, the idea is to knock the United States off the global playing field. We are the brass ring on the carousel. If they get us out of the way and starve everybody to death, it doesn't matter how many guns you have.
Okay.
You better have a lot of food stored because otherwise.
I understand, but when you say get us off the playing field, when you say us, are you talking the middle class, mom and pa, the government, our military? Who do you mean?
All the above.
Yeah.
The country. They need to destroy the country known as the United States of America. And they are well capable of doing it. In fact, it's underway. So we know what's going to happen.
Well, it's not possible if you got a state, enough states, Texas, Rocky Mountain, state Arizona says, F you and we are not playing. I mean, you know, the whole seal of Arizona is about mining and agriculture and ranching. You know,
right.
I like that was a lot of people don't know Arizona is number one in cotton, you know, number two or three, depending on the weather in Florida and California and citrus production, number one in Yuma and freaking lettuce. I mean, you add water here, it grows. And it's just amazing. You know, once you just, and we have 40 years of water under the ground here. They don't want you to know that, and they keep screaming drought all the time, but
right.
That is not so. So Arizona can be fine. You look at a
right.
satellite of west of the Colorado River, and you see all that green in Southern California Valley of how much water we used, and then to the east in Arizona and Quartzsite area and so on, there's an enormous aquifer under there. It hadn't even been tapped yet. So I'm just, there is plenty that can be produced in food in Arizona. We've been doing it. We've done it. They've taken a lot of the citrus groves and so on and put subdivisions on them. But we
right.
have the ability to grow lots of food. We have lots of minerals. We have copper, gold, silver. We have uranium. We have. But it has to take people like yourself and informed individuals to tell the federal government to suck it.
Exactly. There you go. That you just hit it on the head. Without the federal government in the way, everybody would be fine. So here's what we're looking at out there. The Patriot Nurse put this out the other night, and it hit me like a ton of bricks. She says, we've got two choices here. We can go with a constitutional convention, convention of states, which I don't believe will work because we don't have the votes. If you're going to go with a constitutional
doesn't matter.
Convention,
I don't trust them redoing it anyway.
Yeah, we don't have the 2/3 even to get the thing put through, and then we certainly don't have 3/4 of the states willing to ratify it. So the only other option we have is secession. The states are going to have to tell Washington, D.C., adios, mofo, we're out of here, and we're going to do our own thing. And you no longer have power. We go full 10th Amendment. That's our option. And
yeah, you know, I don't know if I told you guys, we had talked to you about, you know, the newspaper we're doing. And I talked to a lot of prominent authors, and they need some time. So we're gonna produce it in early November. So we need to give them in October because some of them are, you know, doing stuff, you know, all the stuff going on. They got books to finish and blah, blah, blah. So we're going to go ahead and have that done in early November. So we got that much time for you guys to generate maybe an article, you know, that needs to be written, but definitely display advertising of all the organizations in Arizona so sure. people know. And there is a lot of stuff I want to expose you guys to that's already happening that have as far down the road as you are for many years, and it's just amazing, and everybody needs to know each other. So it's been, from my experience, there is going to be a secession, at least in the minds of the people. And what's happened, in 1994, I did an initiative that was part of our newspaper, Citizens Taking Initiative, CTI, that was the Arizona's Declaration of Independence. It was filed in 94 as an initiative, and it was to get the press for it and so on, which it did. And all I did is where it said the crown, it was federal government, and where it said these colonies, it said Arizona, and everything applied.
Right, exactly.
It was, you know, here are the reasons. I go, damn, we got the same reasons going on now. So now what?
Yeah.
So it's, I see this, but that's why I deal so much in, you know, in general public opinion, because it has to be one there first. Everything else is just a mop-up operation.
Right.
So it's, what I'm seeing is that the general public opinion has gotten to the point that we're at a point to where everybody's like, this isn't working. And whatever the hell they're trying to, you know, we need to, you know, the new normal or the great reset, or we need to reset or do, and kind of to what? To them being in charge and redistribute and take everybody's property rights and give it to somebody else. We have a story on Freedom's Phoenix today, and it may be towards the bottom, and we put a lot of stuff up, but it was the United Kingdom is buying out older farmers to redistribute their property. And right. anybody, we want to make it a retirement transition of you can't. And then here in America, the way they do it, when you die and you pass on your farm to your kids, they got to pay personal property tax on all your combines and stuff, and they can't afford it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, this is intentional.
It is. Absolutely. People always say, oh, how incompetent President Biden is, and you know what? No, this is not incompetence. This is all staged and planned. Biden's not running the show. People are telling him what to do.
Yeah, I'm wondering, you know, as much as you're accomplishing, the information that you're sharing and the inspiration that you have, how is that? I mean, you know, I don't want to be the IRS here, but I'm like, it's at least philosophical enough, if not political. Know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. What I'm saying outside of our meetings is my own personal opinion. We go on First Amendment. You know, I have the right to my opinion, last I heard. But, you know, in our meetings, we're a little more careful about it. But the bottom line is, if it violates a constitutional right or anything in the Bill of Rights, you know, then that crosses a line. And then we step up and we speak out against it. And we do other things as well. You know, when our security team goes and runs operations in downtown Prescott, that's to protect the community. This is all part of First Amendment. You know, we're not there to go against BLM or Antifa. We're there to make sure everybody goes home safely. You can go ahead and have your little protest. If you want to get your exercise by jumping to conclusions, go right ahead. Just don't break any windows, don't burn any police cars, and don't hurt anyone, and we're good.
Oh, hell, those are the ones that are given an escort home. I mean, they, you know, it's amazing that they would have this kind of violence done against people in their property, and it's allowed and even encouraged.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Kamala Lady Harris, what does she do? Goes and bails people out. I mean, I'm just, this is so topsy-turvy that I think that they just simply do not understand the confirmation they're giving people of what they really are. I don't think they can understand. I don't know. What do you think? Are they just that clueless? Are they following orders, or is it coming from higher up or further out or something?
Well, see, this is the beauty of the Saul Alinsky plan. If you read Saul Alinsky's book, Rules for Radicals, this all makes perfect sense. No, they're not clueless. This is all part of an orchestrated plan that's been going around since the 1960s, and they are planning the communist takeover of the United States. They can come across as clueless, which is, you know, a lot of this comes right from Sun Tzu, if you read The Art of War, and they're using all these tactics combined. And there is a orchestrated plan to make it look a certain way, but it isn't. It's all an illusion. It's all smoke and mirrors. But the bottom line is, we are losing our country as we sit here speaking in this interview. We are losing our country to the Communist Party. And that's always been the plan since going back to the 1920s when the communists first started out in Wisconsin with the Progressive Party. But they weren't progressive, they were communist the whole time. So this is what we're fighting, this is what we're teaching our people to be prepared for. When we talk about that in our meetings, that's not being political, that is telling you a threat assessment, which is what our intelligence team does. We are creating threat assessment reports and telling people that this is not a joke, that they will come to your town and burn it to the ground if your neighborhood preparedness group isn't ready to stand up and defend your property, which you more than have the right to do. Everything we do is constitutional. The Second Amendment wasn't put there for hunting. It was put there to defend people against tyranny and government. And you know, if the United States government...
Let me tell you something that I'm willing to help. And when in Yavapai County, when there's a you know, privately owned little restaurant, there's a gym, there's a retail outlet, and they go, no, I'm not locking down. You know, I'm willing to promote and go and help, and hopefully some of you will be there and, you know, we'll buy a subscription to their coffee of, get some eggs of something, you know.
Right.
This has to be, there can't be another lockdown.
No, there can't, and we're not going to allow it. We're going to go there. We tell our people that if a small business is struggling, get people together, go in there and support that business. Keep the economy going. Those small businesses are the backbone of the economy of the United States. It's not the corporate world. It's the small business owners. And everybody needs those goods and services.
Yeah, I'm not worried about Applebee's or Walmart or, you know, such and such of whatever we comply of. We're Cracker Barrel. You know, I'm just... You know, I need the small people that are serving their community, and when they say they're not essential, and I'm going, I don't know, my kids think I'm essential to put food in their belly. It's stupidity, and we allow, they took advantage of our good nature. They took advantage of our compassion and empathy for others, and we'll give you 2 weeks of, yeah, we'll do 2 weeks, we'll take a little vacation of 2 weeks or whatever, and then it turned in, they go, ha ha, and then they keep amping it up and go, ooh, we did that, watch this, you know. And it seems like these leaders are one up in each other, and the states and the governors, and now Newsom is finding himself up against, but I don't trust the election process either, and I don't care. I'm back in Arizona. We have one more trip that we need to do, and we'll be back. And I got 12 grandkids, 4 kids, and nieces and nephews and sisters and mom and everything in Arizona, and I'm 60. I mean, you know, I did my part. I'm ready to, you know, there's hills to die on. And this mandated vaccine stuff is definitely one of them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I agree.
I mean, I don't care if you want to take it, take it. Don't take it. That's not my point. It's when you got, you know, some government agent chasing you down, going to make you. I'm like, you know, that's one thing. Oh, you'll like this. I was having a conversation with someone. It was this weekend. We were doing a show. And I think it's a sign that we're going to start producing up in Sholo, and we'll share with the state. And it just says, make them make you. And yeah. I don't know how bumper stickers to make it. You know, just make them make you. They're going to try. Well, make them make you. Bring it.
Exactly. Well, I can tell you what Sheriff Scott Masher told us. He said, nobody's sticking a needle in me, and I don't expect any of you to let them do it to you either. So
Oh, yeah. There you go. But you see, you got to count on, you know, a sheriff. He could be gone tomorrow. I mean, you know, right. they definitely don't like having sheriffs around. We went through this with, you know, the 10th Amendment and Sheriff Mack and them, you know, forcing background checks on guns and all this other. We went through this heavy with that.
I remember that. Exactly. Well, that's why what we advocate is nonviolent, peaceful resistance. There's a time for violence. Right now is not it. We've got lots of peaceful options to send a message. And I think the best one, Ernie, is non-compliance.
Non-compliance.
Like you say, tell them to stuff it where the sun doesn't shine. We ain't doing it. And what are they going to do? They're going to
make
them
make
you. Yeah, go for it. Let's see what you got. We're
make
here.
Make you. You got to make me do it.
That's right.
Make them make you. You know, that was... Really, you can call that passive resistance. You know, that's Gandhi stuff. It's, you know, strict noncompliance, whatever you want to call it. You make them make you because it demonstrates what they really are. They're not compassionate. They don't care. They're authoritarian. They're totalitarian.
Exactly.
They're whatever in that they want to make you do it, and they'll show you to do it, and I need to make them make me. It's not that I'm a pacifist. That's part of the action. That's the arrow in my quiver that I choose to use.
Right. Right. We have the Second Amendment, and we will use that at a time of our choosing, not theirs.
As an individual. Thank you for saying that.
Exactly.
You know, my thing, they go, when are you going to, you know, like the militia thing or so on? I'm going, look, you know, when we have Telegram groups and so on for the show and the Love Bus Tour and everything, and you know when they start coming in, a lot of times it's somebody you don't know. It's a provocateur. It's somebody coming in trying to populate your site with, you know, look at these people. Oh, yeah, let's go get them and throw them in a volcano. They'll start off with, they should be dropped from a helicopter, or we need to sacrifice them in the volcano, or some BS like that. And you know what they're doing. And I'm going, look, if that was my inclination, I sure as hell wouldn't say it here, and I sure as hell wouldn't be talking to you about it. You know, it's, you can't infiltrate a militia of one. You alone, what it's going to be, some grandpa, some brother, some father, some son, some daughter, some something, for their own reasons and in their own way, they will repel aggression in whatever way they see fit. And once it starts, it will come from a thousand cuts from everywhere, and there's nothing you can do to stop it. It's a matter of general public opinion.
Exactly.
And so that's, I'm what with you, brother.
For. Yep. Logistics is everything. You want to start a fight, you'd better be able to ride it out. Do you have your food, your water, your medical supplies, your weapons and ammunition, your communications, your shelter is prepared? All of this stuff has to be taken into consideration before some fool goes and kicks off a full-scale kinetic civil war in the United States. And
well,
that's,
you know,
what our
this,
job is.
Well, this is what started during, I remember during the Clinton administration, they were going on about people that were hoarding. It was offensive. They were preparing, which means that they're a threat. You're not allowed to prepare. You're not allowed to hoard food or diapers or baby formula or ammunition, because that makes you prepared. You're not allowed to be prepared because we're scared of you being prepared. What was that all about?
Well, that was back in the militia movement back in the 90s. I remember that. I was smack dab in the middle of it myself. I know exactly what was going on. But you know what? I don't remember any militia going and burning down a church and killing 50 some odd innocent people by burning them to death. Let's see, who was that? Oh, yeah, that's right. It was the government did that. I don't remember any militia going up to Idaho and killing, you know, Randy Weaver's wife and his son and causing all that commotion. Yeah, we're preparing. We just want to be left the hell alone, and we want to be ready for disasters and be able to take care of our families. If they got a problem with that, that's their problem. It's not our problem. But why is it they feel they need to be able to come in there with armed people to tell you that you're doing something wrong when you're not? You just want to be left alone and take care of your family.
You know, internationally, you say you have people that pay attention to and support you from around the world. And I kind of get the impression, I do interviews from around the world, and a lot of, especially Australia, they go, yeah, they took our guns, man. We're waiting on a Merca. You know, Merca need to you know, you got, we're waiting on you to show what's up. And are you getting that impression? They're like, look, man, when America falls, it's over.
Yep. And that's always been the mantra. Once we go down, where's the safe place to be? There isn't one. There's no place for us to run to. An American will be hunted down and killed in any foreign country if we collapse. So what we're trying to propose is that people need to stand up. You need to get ready to defend yourselves, but be prepared to ride it out. If you don't have enough water and food, what's the point of stockpiling guns and ammunition? How are you going to live? You're not going to be able to. So it all works together. It's all about logistics. And the only people that really understand this is the military. Because when they go into a place in some godforsaken third world country to have to fight a conflict, i.e. Afghanistan, you got to bring it all with you because there ain't nothing there.
Oh, I'll tell you who else understands it. Arizona's thick with Mormons, man. They got it going on.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And we take it to the same level. We got a lot of LDS members in our organization. And, you know, they're absolutely right.
The whole side of my mother's family, my sister, Mormon, I grew up on having 2 years of food just out of principle, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And so it just gives you a lot more cover. I mean, you're going to have to, you know, like rice and beans for a while. But, I mean, you know, it's – and you can augment it with, you know, Crown Royal and salt. But, I mean, you know, the point is, you know, is that you have a – you don't have that one less thing to worry about. And, you know, and ammunition and guns and all that. But I mean, you know, until you're able to feed yourself, all that other stuff, because I get that a lot. They're going, yeah, you're always advocating for silver, Ernie, but you can't eat silver. And I'm going, you are correct, sir. And by the time you're getting silver, you already got a couple of years of food. I'll just tell you that right now.
That's right. That should be the last thing you invest in is precious metals. Get everything else you need.
Well, I'm telling you, I'm trading in a little bit, you know, or taking some time. I was going to take some more time, but, you know, more batteries and solar panels and inverters and stuff. Because, you know, as I came back to Arizona and this freaking hot in the desert, I'm going, hell no, I need me some more power making. But I'm feeling better. When my wife and I were gone, we'd been gone like 7 months. And we came back for the holidays last November, and I was very surprised at how compliant everybody was and how many masks I saw.
Oh,
and
I
seen that around the country, most notably, I don't think any other state west of the Mississippi that I've been to was as compliant as Arizona. And when I went to get the equivalent, it had to be like Vermont. And it was, the whole country was saturated with Trump flags, banners, and signs. And it was, you know, to see in Arizona how much Trump support there was, certainly for the 20 election, way more than 16, and for him to lose the state and knowing what we know about elections, I knew that this was not going to go well. And but I also knew that the Maricopa County was not going to give up the ability to determine what really happened. That was not going to happen. Now,
exactly.
Even though they may, and, you know, Dave Hodges and I are good friends, and he and I both spoke Saturday at the Breakfast Club here in the Valley just this last Saturday. And between the two of us, we pretty much painted the picture you did. It's on. And the only thing that's going to push them back is it, I think it's just going to be a delay. They're going to, whoa, we bit off more than we could chew. We need to wait another election cycle or another one or not. These people got to be rooted out, root and branch. We got to get, you know, down to the, you know, these people. You may have a good relationship with some of these people, but if they're in office, they didn't get there because they were freedom fighters, in my opinion.
Well, you know, we've got some. I mean, when you look at Quang Nguyen, you know, where he came from Vietnam as a refugee during the Vietnam era. And he's in it for the right reasons. I think he's a good guy. Judy's a career politician. She does a pretty good job.
No, I know, but, Judy.
You know, I don't put a lot of faith in politicians at all. That's why I do what I do. Because I think politics will fail. It's always failed us in the long run. It's been a dismal failure since day one. The founding fathers did the best they could, But, you know, when they wrote the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, the whole thing was designed around a moral and upright people. They said flat out, this will not work for anybody else. And that's part of the problem. We've lost our morality, and our moral compass in this country is gone.
Well, it was always gone with politicians. Where do you think the sociopaths and psychopaths go?
Exactly. I
mean, that's the first place they go is positions of shiny badges. You know,
that's
and then we gave them our children to educate. You know, we let them raise taxes to the point mom had to be in the workforce. It was a long-term plan. And that's why I'm encouraged by your participation in the newspaper, because we're going to include a lot of curriculum for adults that's going to be, if you really want to know what's going on and you go down this rabbit hole, it's going to take you a couple of months of some study. Here it is. I mean, just, you know, we're not just saying it. I mean, here's the documentation. You know,
exactly.
You know, this is not a secret. It's just a secret to you. And then who are you believing? CNN and MSNBC? You know, hell, Fox? You know, Mike Lindell, you know, my pillow guy, he comes out what communist Fox News is. Hell, CNN will take his ads and Fox won't.
Right, exactly. And you know, the difference between Yavapai County Preparedness Team and USCPT at the national level is we're not doom and gloomers. We're not here to just, you know, make you want to go home and hang yourself. We're going to give you doom and gloom as a threat assessment, and then we're going to tell you what to do to solve the problem. There's always something that can be done and get you better prepared. And you know what? Everybody that listens to my training comes back to me and says, you know, I just felt better that I went out and bought some extra food, extra toilet paper. I bought a gun. And now I feel like I've done something proactive.
Exactly.
Rather than these people that just go out and want to hit the doom and gloom on the internet. You listen to that all the time and they don't give you anything to do. Yeah, you will go out and hang yourself. That's just the way it's going to be.
Well, we've been very successful over the years of building people that are, you know, able to take care of themselves. So they got a little extra for their loved ones, neighbors, family. And one of the other things before we go, I wanted to talk about is communication. And I know you guys have gotten, you know, big into ham radios and being able to communicate. And what made me feel better is I go, well, are all of them licensed? And you go, no.
No, they're not. Quite a few are, and we have the largest communication system, I think, in the state, because we have people all over the state that have our radio systems. But we set up a program so that there is a communications plan in an emergency. If the power grid goes down and the cell towers go down, which has happened, somebody cuts a fiber optic cable in New River and wipes out the computers, we have our ham radios, and those will always work. Unless some military force comes in here with jamming capability, your ham radio is going to work. And we train people in that. We run a weekly net. We test everything. Our individual neighborhood preparedness groups run their own weekly nets to test their systems out. And we teach everything from bubble pack radios, FRS, GMRS. We teach 2 meter, 70 centimeter handhelds. And then a lot of guys have base units. So we set up our own communication system, which, by the way, if you're FCC licensed, you are part of the government system. It was set up that way in the event of a nuclear war, that they would have people who could set up and run emergency communications. And this has already been proven. Like during the hurricane that hit Puerto Rico, you know, the first people to have communications were the amateur radio operators. The government couldn't get into Puerto Rico and set up a damn antenna with a radio. It took individual ham radio guys out of Florida to go down there and set up an emergency communication system so that they could talk to the damn government.
Yeah. Did they get a permit?
Hell no. Hell no.
You know, this is... I'm so glad to have spent time with you and introduced you to the audience. And this is just... You know, do you think you're a rarity in Arizona, or is there a bunch of Jims and Janets replicated around the state?
No, I think there's a lot of us out there. I don't think there are a lot of them with the real leadership capabilities that we've developed. And we have perfected this program to the point where we can teach anybody how to do it. I think there's a lot of good people out there, but there's always problems with leadership. Egos get in the way, and, you know, or they don't have the experience and they want to do the right thing, but they don't know how to go about it. Our main bailiwick is to teach people how to form a group, how to hold meetings, how to hold trainings, so that you can become a force multiplier. And that's what I want to do, is teach the leaders out there so that this thing can be replicated, because it's not that hard to do, but there are tricks to the trade. And
well, hell, that was what special forces were.
Exactly. That's why we have always been a special forces format. Yeah. I'm not a former Green Beret. I'm a former U.S. Army Ranger, but I worked with enough Green Berets, and I have friends that are Green Berets. I know their system probably better than they do. So that's what we've replicated, and it works. It definitely works.
Of course it does. You know, this has been a really refreshing interview, and I'm glad we got to meet each other. I think we're going to be meeting again. We'll be probably, you know, if I got to tell you I came to Prescott over the next couple of weeks, I didn't do it right. You know what I mean?
Right. Exactly.
You know, anything else you want to share with the audience, or sites you want to give out, web pages?
If I could, I'd love to give out our information on this. Well, this is on our screen on here, but the name of the website is YCPT. That's for Yavapai County Preparedness Team, ycpt.org. And then we also have an email address if you want to contact us direct. It's yavapaicpt@gmail.com. Or you can also use the YC Oath Keepers, YC for Yavapai County, ycoathkeepers@gmail.com. And then the phone number is 928-636-8895. That's 928-636-8895. And Janet runs the corporation full time. She'll answer the phone most of the time, or we'll get right back to you. Or go to our YouTube channel if you want to see our meetings and see what we're doing. Go to YouTube and just type in Yavapai County Preparedness Team. You got to spell it all the way out in the search bar. Mm-hmm. And all of our videos will turn up. We also have a MeWe social media page. Just go to MeWe.com and go to Yavapai County Preparedness Team, and you'll be able to find our social media. So anything we can do to help, guys, all you need to do is contact us. We will do everything we can to set you up. Mostly what we recommend, if you're local, is to come to our meetings and watch how we operate.
You know, how we met is my sister lives in Prescott. I happened to stop when a air canister brake thing went out on the bus, and we just happened to stop right in front of the only place in the area that could fix it. And we just said, all right, it's a God thing, let him do it. We'll spend a couple of days hanging out with my sister. Donna went to the valley to do grandkids stuff, and I hung out up there with her. Got a call from the Yavapai
Rising.org,
Dora. And she was looking for me and found the number she thought was to the Breakfast Club or something. Anyway, boom, well, I'm the guy you're looking for. Boom! So we go that evening, had a meeting. We meet with, you know, a dozen people, executive board of two or three groups or whatever, to have this conversation, get all hooked up where we can help each other. And the first thing, you know, I'm thinking, and I said to you, is I go, yep. And James needs to be a poster child. Yeah, he's all purdy and kind of, you know, the gray-haired, distinguished-looking, you know, pioneer type of whatever. And I go to Yavapai County Preparedness Team later. Sure as crap, there's a big picture of you. You got a poster of you, you know? That's why your wife was laughing when I was saying that.
That's right.
So you go there and you'll recognize, yep, there he is, you know, in all his glory.
Not hiding.
You know, so this is great that people have such an open and transparent and informative group such as yours that can be able to help them. And I think we're all of like mind. We've been doing this as the libertarian wing of freedom in Arizona and certainly in Maricopa County for 30 years. And as we've campaigned around the state, and we knew that rural Arizona was already ready for this. That we knew that they were already prepared, that they had the right mindset, but we were not ready for how infiltrated these counties had become at the county and municipal levels and right. the bureaucrats. And that was the show that Dara and I had done a couple of weeks ago that was about how it was done through the League of Cities and Towns, and this was a concentrated effort. Well, now that we're getting communicated with each other on this stuff is right when they're trying to sever those communications with deplatforming. So it's going to get worse. We've been working on that with the radio communication you have, and I think they've bitten off more than they anticipated. And in the end, freedom always wins. It just gets really messy first. Well, exactly. We're preparing for the mess. Here we go. Yavapai County Preparedness Team. You put that in any search engine, and it'll blow up all over the place. And he's giving you the information to contact them. And it sounds like James and Janet are ready and willing to take your calls and emails, aren't you?
Oh, absolutely. And we'll get back to you as quick as we can, and we'll help you in any way we can. And if you just do what we've done, it will work. Don't reinvent the wheel. Don't try to change things. Trust me, we know what we're doing. We've got the experience. We've got the numbers to prove it. And we're moving. And people are telling me that when all crap breaks loose out there, Yavapai County, Arizona is going to be one of the safest places to be compared to anywhere else.
Well, that means you're also a target. I can just tell you that right now. But if you know it's coming and you're ready, then even better. You know,
bring friends.
Make them make you.
That's
and
it.
Bring friends with rifles. Yeah, no, right. I get it. Hey, thanks for coming on the show and sharing with us. You know, it's been a pleasure. Jim and Janet Arroyo, our new friends. Thank you very much.
And thank you, Ernie. I really appreciate it. God bless.
God bless you, too. Bye-bye.